Speaking in the very room where the hearings to impeach him began, Donald Trump this week declared the state of the American Union stronger than ever, a speech traditionally used by American presidents to appeal for bipartisan unity on ambitious political aims, became nothing short of an election rallying cry as the president took credit for what he called the Great American Comeback. Many of his listeners will have found themselves pondering the Democrats' chances of making a comeback after this week's chaotic primary election in Iowa. Our topic today, U.S. election year, is Trump unstoppable? Welcome to The Point. And it's a pleasure to introduce our guests. Rick Nowak from the Washington Post's Berlin Bureau. He says Trump's State of the Union address was filled with a sense of vindication, both on domestic and foreign issues. But it might be too early for that. With us is also Ralph Freund. He is Speaker of Republicans Overseas, Germany. And his opinion, Donald Trump is a president who delivers on his promises. And it's a pleasure to welcome Rachel Tausenfreund. She's editorial director at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. She says Trump has had a very good start in 2020, but his successes are more show than substance. So, in his State of the Union, President Trump was speaking really just hours before he was acquitted in the second stage of the impeachment proceedings, which, of course, had been expected, especially by him. Was the enormous confidence that he projected in his State of the Union speech a sign that we are now going to be seeing Trump unleashed and emboldened?
Well, to some extent, that's what he wanted to project. But I think when you especially looked at the second half of the speech, where he very much attacked the Democrats, even though he didn't bring up impeachment itself, you could tell that this is probably going to become a very ugly election campaign. And impeachment specifically is going to haunt him.
Rachel, would you agree? Trump unbound?
Yeah, well, Trump's always been pretty bold. This was part of his signature. But sure, the Republicans have now basically told him, go for it. We're all behind you. Do what you want. And he's going to take that forward in the election year, I think.
Ralph?
Well, I think he's a strong president, has a strong support of his party, which is, like, absolutely necessary for the next 9 months.
Let's take a listen to some of the claims that he did make in that State of the Union speech.
I am thrilled to report to you tonight that our economy is the best it has ever been. Our military is completely rebuilt, with its power being unmatched anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. Our borders are secure. Our families are flourishing. Our values are renewed. Our pride is restored. And for all of these reasons, I say to the people of our great country and to the members of Congress, the state of our union is stronger than ever before.
So you said it might be too early for this sense of vindication that he displayed. When you listen to that list of claims made just there, where would you say time will, in fact, wind up proving the president wrong?
Well, there could be a number of issues that could be coming up during this year. One of them is certainly or his comments on the so-called Islamic State. We don't know to what extent that group could regroup in Syria, Iraq, over the next months. The UN certainly is saying that's a risk. When you look at trade, there are a number of unknowns, especially when it comes to the trade deal with China and potentially even the impact of the coronavirus. On that, whether China will be hit so hard that it can't fulfill what it signed in this first agreement. So there are a number of issues, North Korea as well, or sort of the fears in Europe that he might still trigger a trade war or some dispute with the Europeans as well. So those are the foreign policy issues, but there is, of course, a lot of domestic issues as well.
And in fact, foreign policy didn't figure strongly in the speech. It was very much about the domestic situation. Rachel, you say President Trump's successes are more show than substance, but isn't it true that the economy is flourishing and that unemployment is as low as it's been in decades?
Unemployment is pretty low. It's not as low as it's ever been, as he claimed, nor is the economy as better than it's ever been. So it's true unemployment is low, but growth is not very impressive. It's under 3%. That's not great. And growth, particularly in the manufacturing sector, which is important in places like Michigan, where I'm from, that's really slow. It's in fact undergoing what they call a technical recession. So the success is pretty superficial. If all you care about is the stock market, then yes, the economy looks great. But if you care about sort of middle income, actual household income, it's a pretty superficial success, and it's tenuous.
Ralph, let's drill down on a couple of those economic factors. President Trump actually promised 4% growth when he came into office, as you'll remember, as Rachel just reminded us, it's now just above 2%. And he also absolutely claimed credit for this great American comeback, essentially saying things had been very dire before he came into office. The fact is, the growth trend started under President Obama, and the growth rate was actually higher under Obama, wasn't it?
Well, first of all, the Basel's effect, you know, because we had a lower level, because it was easier, to increase the numbers. But me, as an economist, I have to tell you, if I compare, flip back 4 years ago, they claim when Trump gets elected, the stock market is going to tumble, the economy is going to crash, the trade war is going to happen. Nothing happened. We have more trade, we have a higher GDP, a gross domestic product, we have a lower unemployment rates. It's fabulous. Now I have to argue, well, it's still growth, but now there's a quality of growth. So I think we're talking about two different issues.
But also on trade, for example, the aluminum and steel tariffs. Ford company in Michigan would disagree with you. That was a painful tariff.
It's got to hurt. It's got to hurt, but it hurts more our trade partners who do unfair trade.
Small farmers in the Midwest would also disagree.
He announced that before he got elected. One of the few presidents who told, listen, it's going to hurt you, but in the long run, you're going to benefit. He told his voters the truth.
Let me ask you, Rick, to come in also on trade policy, because the president said in the State of the Union quite explicitly that his trade policy, his trade war with China, was responsible for job growth. Would you say that is true?
Well, in fact, it has caused a lot of damage and nightmares to a lot of people. It's currently not clear if it's going to lead to the sort of growth he has predicted. I think so far that trade war has mainly been damaging. It could be an advantage that now he has reached some sort of first agreement. But certainly it hasn't contributed to growth to have a trade war happening.
Ralph, if we look at sectors like steel, Rachel mentioned it, steel prices went up quite dramatically after those tariffs were slapped on. There were some new jobs created in the sector, but economists are analyzing that the cost of each of those jobs was $900,000 because of the macroeconomic costs that the trade tariffs imposed. So how do you reconcile that?
How does that match, you mean? Well, you got to invest.
How do you sell me that as a benefit?
Well, you got to invest before you earn. I mean, as simple as this. The damage to the overall economy because of unfair trade with China, with Southeast Asia in general, is much larger than the small sector of steel and aluminum. You got to invest, you got to hurt before you earn the money. I think, as you mentioned, I think in the mid and long run, we're going to follow that up very carefully. I think everybody's going to benefit from there dramatically.
But if you want to improve or change the trade relationship with China, and this is the big problem, and I would agree with you there, isn't it kind of unclever to start a war with your allies who could be on the side of helping you change relationship
with
China?
Well, me as a German who is even involved in those trade talks on the very low level at the AmCham Germany, I got to tell you, the Germans tend to, go to Washington, whether it's George Bush Jr. or Obama or Clinton, and they all complain about this trade barrier, the tariffs, and nothing has happened. At some point, you have to start, and I think he did it correctly. He's got to do it to Europe, and he has to also do the same thing to China. I think it's just fair.
I think what's certainly accurate to say is that the Europeans have now seen that he isn't joking when he threatens trade wars, and I think that's certainly a real outcome of the whole.
Indeed, they're quite concerned that he may be setting his sights on them next up. But let me take us to another sector, which is of enormous consequence for the upcoming election, and that's health care. Rachel, in that soundbite that we heard, the president talked about families flourishing. Would you say that that's true of middle-class families in regard to health care and especially insurance?
No, of course not. I mean, even Obama's health care reform, which was a huge step and did give access to many more people than before, I mean, it's still
20 million more.
Yeah, 20 million more. But, you know, the plans were still pretty expensive, and healthcare costs are just absurdly high in the United States. And, you know, I live in Germany. I have social healthcare. The coverage isn't better, right? And people are realizing this. Prescription drug prices are absurdly high, even if they've fallen by 2%. You know, fall by 2% when they're 200% too high is not enough.
So the in the section of the speech where the president talked about his desire to bring prices for pharmaceuticals down, right, a number of Congress people from the Democratic Party stood up and started calling H.R. 3. That's the name of the bill that they had proposed to bring pharmaceutical prices down that was nixed by Republicans.
That's absolutely true. And on the health issue, I'm not in line with the president, I have to be honest. I think there could be better solutions than the current health plan from the president. I have to admit that. But still, he talked to the industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and he urged them to lower prices. So he did achieve something. It was not that he stood aside.
Let me ask come back to the question of foreign policy. As I said, it didn't get a lot of attention in this speech, but we did hear one claim in the clip that we played from the speech, and that was that American prestige has been restored. Is that your perspective, Rick, as an American who is based here in Germany and Europe?
Certainly not in Europe. I mean, when you look at the Pew poll numbers, they show very clearly that...
Research Foundation.
Yes, yeah. Thanks. They show very clearly that most Europeans do not agree with that. In some countries, a very small amount. He does have quite high approval ratings, but that's not at all the case in Europe. There are numerous reasons, trade being one of them. His very inconsistent foreign policy that has repeatedly shown on North Korea, his approach to the Kurds and the Middle East in general, really.
Ralph, let me ask you this, and I'll ask Rachel to comment after that. Donald Trump made a very clear promise in his inaugural address and during his election campaign in 2016 to take the U.S. out of what he called the endless wars, especially in the Middle East.
Right.
You say in your opening statement that he keeps his promises, but that's one he definitely has not kept.
Well, I'm sure he has less soldiers overseas, that's for sure, and he secured defense, the defense budget. He increased the defense budget. Did a pretty good job. He did not send out 400,000 phones in his last year like Obama did. He sent in 3 years less than Obama in 1 year.
He did actually increase the forces deployed in the Middle East.
In the Middle East,
recently,
but not overall.
And over the last year, by 14,000.
That's right, but not overall. Overall, he has less soldiers overseas, which is quite an achievement, I believe. Trump is not somebody who started a war. He got even blamed that he stepped back from the Kurds, so you cannot claim him as somebody who's aggressive.
Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. He didn't start any wars, but he's aggressive in small symbolic ways without having a strategy behind it, right? This was, and, you know, he got lucky with General Soleimani that, you know, other people were scared that this, the strike on the Iranian general. But he's, you know, he's not pulling out of wars. He doesn't have a strategy to do it. His strategy is shoot a couple of rockets to have a symbolic effect. And I don't see anything beyond that.
Do you think it matters to voters?
I think it matters less to voters than a lot of other things, frankly. And the problem is voters also, they don't follow these issues that closely. And so when he says he's doing this or that, they're probably going to believe him. So the only thing, it would have to be a pretty dramatic shift, you know, a lot more soldiers, or, for example, much higher casualty rates for it to have the same effect.
Or a war with Iran.
But or a war with Iran, which,
I'm not even going to go there because we don't have that kind of time. But what I do want to talk about briefly before we start taking a look at some of the Democrats and whether they can actually put up a good fight, Rick, is the claim that the union is stronger than ever. Again, something we heard there in that clip. Doesn't the polarization that was on display on Tuesday night in the Capitol very much put the lie to that claim?
That's true. That speech and the reaction by Nancy Pelosi was essentially it showed just how much the country is divided. And him celebrating his poll ratings, I mean, given the state of the economy and so on, they probably should be even higher. And the question is, why are they not? And if you ask African-Americans, Asian-Americans, whom he tried to reach out in this address, to whom he tried to reach out, they'll tell you it's very much the other side of the coin, the immigration policies considered by his critics inhumane and other things that just aren't acceptable to them.
Ralph, that was very much a speech to his base.
Right.
We actually heard the Republicans in the room get up and start shouting, four more years, four
right.
more years.
Right.
We saw him refuse to take the house of the speaker, the hand of the speaker.
Well, he didn't shake the hand of Vice President Pence also. So.
Well, she reached her hand out. He didn't take it. At the end, then, she tore up her copy of the speech. Those are shocking gestures for me. I have to say, this is the highest level of polarization I have seen in my lifetime. Can the president win by energizing his base alone?
Well, he did 4 years ago, but I think it'll go further. We had this before that the polls were quite low and the outcome was quite high. Now even the polls are pretty. I'm pretty confident with the polls currently, and I think the outcome is going to be even higher because now he has a track record. He can prove what he achieved, and he delivered a lot of things. As we know, you might not like it and you might not appreciate it, but he delivered. I think he's a very convincing president.
So polarization presents the Democrats with a major dilemma. To defeat Trump, they need a candidate who can mobilize their most passionate voters on the left. Or should they choose someone with broader appeal, possibly even to moderate voters with no party affiliation? This week's chaotic primary election in Iowa shows just how difficult that choice will be.
The Iowa caucus's rising star, Pete Buttigieg. The only openly gay candidate, the 38-year-old mayor from South Bend, Indiana, is considered a centrist.
Ready to bring change to this country.
Joe Biden, former vice president under Barack Obama, is also a centrist candidate. The 77-year-old sets his hope on balancing the camps.
We choose unity over division. And guess what? We choose truth over lies.
It's the oldest candidate, Bernie Sanders, who's popular among young voters. The 78-year-old senator from Vermont calls himself a democratic socialist.
And together, we will defeat the most dangerous president in modern American history. Thank you all so much.
Sanders wants to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans, scrap tuition fees, and implement universal health insurance coverage. Will one of these candidates be able to win an election against Trump?
So let me put that question straight away to all of you. Who could beat Trump, if anybody?
Well, that's a difficult question. Joe Biden certainly looks a lot weaker than he did when all of this began. Bernie Sanders is very forceful, and some would say he at least has sort of the temperament that could help beat Trump. But I think a lot of people in the middle would seriously doubt that. And then there's Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg, who also seem a little currently below kind of the curve of people who might make it.
Yeah. Elizabeth Warren didn't figure in that report, Rachel, because she didn't come out so well in Iowa, although she didn't come out so badly either. So let's bring her into the mix. And who do you think could beat Trump, if anybody?
I think they could all beat Trump, frankly. it's, I mean, you have to remember who lost to Trump last time was Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton was not a candidate who would either excite the sort of young far left part of the Democratic Party, nor was she a candidate that could win over, you know, sort of moderate Republicans or independents, because she had been kind of the hated figure.
Why did you get nominated then?
Well, that's a long story. Yeah, that's a long story.
Can we start on that track?
I mean, please. I mean, so why did she succeed? I mean,
it's a good question.
She seemed like a safe choice. Yeah,
she's not running.
She seemed like a safe choice at the time, but you know, it was her deficits were pretty clear.
Okay, but do you have a favorite among the four that we're talking about here?
I mean, look, I think coming out of Iowa, we have two strong centrist candidates, and neither one of them is Biden, and two strong left. So Sanders and Elizabeth Warren representing the left. I think, I personally think Warren has better chance of getting independent voters than Sanders, while also exciting his left wing. So I feel like she's the stronger one on the left.
Ralph.
Well, if you ask me if I have fear of anybody, no, I don't. But I think a mixture of Biden and Buttigieg are like the moderate ones. They can, you know, they can cover both dreams. I think they have the best chances. And don't forget Mr. Bloomberg.
Yeah, yeah, right. The billionaire in the wings. Rick, Bernie Sanders, looking at him, I sometimes feel like he's the left-wing version of Trump. Is that a plus? If that's if you think that's true, maybe you don't. Would you say that's a plus or a minus for him?
Well, I think looking at it from Europe, he doesn't look like the Trump of America, because a lot of his positions are, frankly, quite similar to mainstream public belief here. But putting that aside, it could help him, because Trump is such a candidate who defies the norms of politics the way we've seen it over the last decades in the United States. So perhaps, I think his supporters hope, at least, Sanders can beat him by being different.
Wouldn't he be demolished by Trump for his claim to be a socialist, Rachel? Yes. If you look at polls, 70% of Americans say they're not so sure about socialism.
Yeah.
70% of undecided voters,
Yeah.
John Kerry was overheard in Iowa in a hotel room saying that he might enter the race in order to stop Sanders. Clearly, at least the party establishment is very worried about Sanders.
Yeah, I think the party establishment is very worried. I'm not sure that they're right to be so worried, frankly. The party establishment were the ones who thought Hillary Clinton was a much safer choice. But in fact, it is that one word, socialist, that is going to be a big weakness for Sanders. And because Americans hear socialist, they think communist. We just don't have the same history of social democracy. And that's going to take too much explaining for Sanders. It's going to be tough.
To support a little bit of Sanders, I have to admit, even Trump didn't have the support of the party, and he bypassed the party and did pretty well.
Yeah.
So even Sanders could bypass the party and do pretty well. So this is not something I would be worried about.
That actually brings me to the question of whether any of these candidates can unify the fractious Democratic Party the way that Trump has brought his party into lockstep.
Right, but that only really happened after the election, right? As you said, it might not even be necessary to run this campaign, I think.
Right.
Rachel, it's often said that Pete Buttigieg doesn't have what it takes to attract minority voters, and that it will be absolutely crucial for a successful Democratic candidate to mobilize them. Do you think that's true, and could it change?
So the polls so far would indicate that is his big weakness, but it could change, right? A lot of minority voters, especially African American voters, they want to go with what's sure. So if Pete Buttigieg looks like he's a winner, then I think in the end they'll support him. But South Carolina is going to be an important primary to see.
Yes, because Ohio is a pretty white state.
New Hampshire as well.
New Hampshire is the next.
Will be white state. So, like, the check, if he can, like, attract minorities, is not been proven yet.
What difference, if any, and I'll ask you to be very brief, Ralph, if you would, do you think the impeachment process will make to those undecided voters?
No.
To the undecided voters.
That's an old story. They want the outlook. They look at the economy, look at the financials. They look definitely at health insurance. That's going to be one of the big topics. I don't think impeachment is going to be a topic in 3 to 6 months.
Rick, what could happen between now and November to change the equation, and I'm taking us back to our title, and stop this president who right now looks unstoppable?
he himself, probably, because he's been so unpredictable. And that's why a lot of countries, some dictators fear him, others don't. It's really himself. He can change the equation.
Rachel?
Yeah, I think either some kind of, you know, chaos and scandal, which, you know, we've already seen a few of these.
None of them stuck so far.
Yeah, or economy. I think, if something changes there, that's also going to be a problem for him.
Right. Ralph, is he going to be elected again?
Very hard. Too far away to call. I can't say it. He has good chances, better than last time. But if he wins, for sure, I can't call it right now.
Okay. Thanks very much to all of you for being with us. And thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. See you soon.